Welcome to Security Wire Weekly, a CertSecurity.com podcast for October 26th, 2010. In this edition, we talk about tokenization. Gary Palgon, a Vice President of Product Management of New Bridges, joins us. He's the leader of the PCI Tokenization Working Group. It's a scoping special interest group of the PCI Security Standards Council.
So there's a somewhat distancing, if you will, the actual standard from the guidance, and then giving merchants and service providers and others different mechanisms or different methodologies from a technology standpoint to comply with the standards that are out there.
Thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Westervelt. Well, tokenization is a major issue right now in the PCI realm. Supplemental guidance papers have already been issued on point-to-point encryption and EMV technologies in the payment card data environment. And more guidance is expected in November around tokenization. Joining me here is Gary Palgon. He's Vice President of Product Management at New Bridges, but he leads the Tokenization Working Group, one of four working groups in the PCI Security Standard Council's Scoping Special Interest Group. Gary is joining us from Barcelona, Spain, where he is at the PCI SSC community meetings. He also attended the community meeting here in the U.S. in Orlando back in September. Gary, hey, thanks very much for taking the time out of your time there in Barcelona. I appreciate it.
Thank you for hosting the call today.
I know you attended the Orlando PCI SSC community meetings, and I read your blog entry that kind of gave an overview of what it was like down there in Orlando. You mentioned that there was an increase in attendees, and there seemed to be more merchants this year.
Yeah, so there were, I think there were about 1,200 people registered, and the room was definitely filled up with folks. I think over the past few years, and, you know, I've attended all of the North American conferences, the first year there were about 250 of us, and it was primarily just vendors and actual QSAs trying to figure out the standard. And each year we've seen an increase of individuals attending, and I definitely see it's a lot of merchants. And I think the reason why is the merchants are trying to gain a little bit more knowledge and control of their environment, having more intelligent conversations with the security consultants that come in or the QSAs that come in to approve their solutions. Our own customers included, some of them have gone to what they call the ISA training, the actual independent training that the council offers to become more knowledgeable. And so, you know, with the increase from last year from 700 to close to 1,200 registered in North America, you know, there's a big group there. And I mean, currently, as you mentioned, I think at the beginning of the call, I'm in Barcelona, and we just finished up two and a half days of the European conference. And again, I would venture to say, I don't know what the final numbers were. I know at Orlando, they said it was above 250. I would think it's probably close to 400. I'm heavy here on the QSA and the vendor, a lot less merchant. But again, it's just the community is maturing, much like North America has over the past few years.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know you lead the Tokenization Working Group. It's one of four working groups in the PCI Council's Scoping Special Interest Group. It seems like what the PCI Council is doing at this point is releasing initial guidance documents on certain evolving technologies. At some point, and once the validation requirements are in place for some of these technologies, whether it be enterprise end-to-end encryption or point-to-point encryption or virtualization technology or even tokenization, will this eventually be put into the actual standard, or is it the goal to keep it out of the standard and just issue guidance documents from here on out?
Yeah, so one of the changes that they announced, which will be part of the official release of the updated standards at the end of October, is that they're moving from a 2 to a 3 year cycle of review. Mm-hmm. And with that, you know, they're indicating it's because of the maturity of the standard. So, you know, even the 2.0 updates that they're issuing for PA DSS as well as PCI DSS, they're not increasing the number of requirements, but they're clarifying still a lot of ambiguity or interpretation to be made, and that's where they're hoping that these guidance documents help. And you pointed out right, so the first couple documents that have come out, the point-to-point encryption as well as the EMV, are guidance documents to be followed by a validation kind of document. So there are some things that I think across the groups as input that will make amends to the actual PCI requirements, but from what they've said, they don't intend on actually sort of codifying, if you will, the technology level into the actual PCI requirements themselves, leaving the if you will, the requirements as the principles or the objectives, and then they're leaving the technology level as mechanisms or methodologies to address that. So there's a somewhat distancing, if you will, the actual standard from the guidance, and then giving merchants and service providers and others different mechanisms or different methodologies from a technology standpoint to comply with the standards.
What's the reasoning behind that? And, you know, as a person leading one of these special interest groups, how do you feel about that, that the standard itself won't likely be updated with specific information on some of these evolving technologies?
Well, I think two things. One is, you know, the overall goal from the whole payment card industry's initiative is to reduce the risk and to secure the information. So everything that we do has to move forward. I think from a technology standpoint, you know, they've called them emerging technologies, but the fact of the matter is, you know, even tokenization has been around for several years, and companies are using it successfully to increase the level of security beyond that of the actual PCI requirements. You know, PCI, we've dealt with, you know, compliance doesn't equal security. So I think the guidance, again, it gives merchants options. I think from a security standpoint, companies need to really take a step further and really understand how to best protect their organizations. PCI Council could go further and faster, and I'll call codifying or approving some of the decisions that are out there. We made great progress this past year, especially the last 2.5 months, where the technical working group, and those are the folks that actually released the standards and released these guidelines, the technical working group began actually working in tandem with the special interest groups. That I deal with is a scoping SIG. So we made a lot of progress in the last 2.5 months in working together as opposed to two individual stovepipes sort of converging at the end. So I think the next year will be better, but there is still, you know, people walk away from these conferences saying, why won't they make a decision on X? Why won't they just come out and state why? And so from a personal standpoint, as well as a New Bridges standpoint, and I speak for even, you know, our competitors out there, they'd like the council to move quicker in approving and blessing these solutions and the technology. And I think they're just taking, you know, one step at a time. So it definitely could move faster.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the guidance documents that were recently released. One was around point-to-point encryption and the other around EMV technologies. Really, the guidance papers kind of laid out that although encryption itself is mature and has been used for years, the whole notion of these new point-to-point encryption products coming out from different vendors is relatively immature in terms of implementation. Do you agree with that, and how does it relate to tokenization?
I see and call it out probably once or twice a week where I see an article written that says, you know, tokenization is a silver bullet. You don't have to deal with encryption or key management anymore. And that's actually, you know, a myth. It's a falsehood because the tokenization solutions, that, you know, they obfuscate the data and map it to a value, but you're still storing the ciphertext, right, the credit card number, and still handle key management as part of that. It's just done differently, but you're removing the mathematical relationship between the token and the information that's stored. So encryption is definitely part of all tokenization solutions out there. Now, where we have seen over the last year played out is it was an either-or between what the industry or the marketplace refers to as end-to-end encryption versus tokenization. And what has evolved during the year is it's really a best of both worlds. And so the council has called in, and now it's receiving more adoption of point-to-point encryption and tokenization. And what's really converging there is this. For a credit card transaction, you want to be able to encrypt as early as possible, called the point of interaction, which is, you know, more often than not a point of sale or an e-commerce site, or it could be, again, this audio, you know, call center where they're getting the information. encrypt it as early as possible, and then use that encrypted value throughout the information supply chain for authorization process, right? So be able to maintain the encryption as long as possible, and then when it needs to be authorized by a bank, then, you know, then it only ends decrypted. And then for all post-authorization processes, use a token, right? So it's not no longer the cardholder data. So it's the convergence of those two things that allow the most de-scoping, if you will, or the smallest cardholder data environment to be used. So those two have definitely converged. So that's sort of the pieces of where those fit together. And then back to the earlier part of the question as far as, you know, are the technologies new and what are the waiting? There are pieces of the technologies that, in fact, are new depending upon the solutions that are out there. Some are, you know, no longer, you know, the algorithms, if you will, for encryption aren't NIST certified. There are no emphatic tokenization standards for the algorithm for creating those. And so the basis for these technologies, like you said, have been available for a long time. But more often than not, it's not so much the technology that is in question, but its applicability to determining whether or not there's risk from a cardholder perspective.
One other area that was mentioned in the point-to-point guidance that was fairly important was a warning to merchants that there is a possibility of vendor lock-in. Obviously, you represent a vendor as the Vice President of Product Management of New Bridges, but how do you feel about that notion of vendor lock-in? And that, I suppose that goes back to the fact that there isn't a lot of standards out there right now in, around these new technologies.
Yeah, so it is. And I think what you know, from the council standpoint, what they're saying is, you know, we don't intend to radically change the actual requirements year after year, but we also want to caution you that when you choose a technology or a solution to use that you don't, you know, get locked into one way. I think there are specific examples for circumstances. For instance, in tokenization, if you select a single outsourced tokenization provider that's doing your payment processing, and then you decide to change later on, what are the ramifications of that? And one example from a token standpoint is if, in fact, that outsourced provider maintains the relationship between the token and the credit card numbers, and then when you decide to change processors, they don't give you that relationship, you know, they don't give you that information, your enterprise has these tokens throughout it, for instance, in a data warehouse or a loss prevention system that it knows and has been able to use for analysis for historical transactions or uses for, you know, fraud and loss protecting, you know, for prevention. And so what happens when you switch providers? And so there's an example where they're talking about vendor lock-in where, in fact, you have these tokens throughout your enterprise that the new provider doesn't know what they align with. So I think there are specific instances where it, in fact, makes sense that it is a problem. You know, and you need to be aware of that and proceed with caution. I think that's a little bit different than saying, you know, for instance, with a New Bridges solution where you're putting in there, if you don't like our solution, you have the ability to leave, but at least in that case, from a tokenization standpoint, you can export both the relationship, you know, between the actual tokens and the ciphertext, so you preserve that as you, you know, went on to another vendor. So I think their warnings are a little bit strong in some areas, and again, it has something to do, in my opinion, with of them making emphatic decisions or supporting or blessing specific solutions.
Mm-hmm. What particular, any particular area that you can point out where you think the warnings are a little strong?
In general, when they say, you know, we're not going to, for instance, right now, and we've asked for this for the last 4 years before the council even really got started, and that is, you know, why wouldn't you certify a solution, you know, like New Bridges for encryption and key management and tokenization, whereas today the only thing that's certified according to the, you know, the payment card industry are payment applications. You know? And I can tell you that our solutions and our competitor solutions and others out there are processing, you know, as many credit cards as a point of sale, right? They leave a point of sale and they go right through our solution. So we'd like to be included. We'd like a certification from the council for you know, our solution. You know, just because we don't actually do the authorization doesn't mean that they shouldn't address that. So, you know, rather than cast a warning on New Bridges, we've reached out and said, hey, how about, you know, including ours and let our solutions be tested and validated. And so there's a good example where us as well as, you know, competitors that I talk to all the time as part of the working group, right? So, you know, the tokenization working group that I lead, you know, many of our competitors are on the phone, and I know the folks very well, and we're all asking for that validation. And so rather than casting warning, it would be great to say, you know, why don't you just, you know, let's work something out so that, in fact, you can validate our solutions as being PCI compliant instead of having them blessed, if you will, as PCI compliant once they're in the merchant or service provider's environment and going through PCI DSS compliance itself.
Do you anticipate that when and if the tokenization supplemental guidance on tokenization is released and then once the validation requirements are put in place?
Yeah, so they're anticipating, they're hoping for an end of November or an early December delivery of the tokenization guidance document. And then we don't have a date from them as far as the validation, but it will be my group's responsibility to begin pulling that together. They're very much interested in us collaborating with them to produce that. And so we're going to, you know, leave Barcelona and we're going to march forward on beginning to put together what we think are the right bullet points, if you will, check boxes to ensure validation while they go off in the short term and approve the guiding principles that we put in place there. So for point-to-point encryption, they've said it'll be out for comment in 2011. You know, if I had my druthers, not only would it be out for comment, but it would be, you know, validated in towards the latter stages of 2011 and moving forward, you know, companies can actually go down that validation, you know, checklist for EMV and the point-to-point encryption and say, yep, we've met everything, not only from a requirement standpoint, but from a validation standpoint. Mm-hmm. And that just makes it more consistent and stronger across the board.
We talked a bit about vendor lock-in. One of the other areas in terms of tokenization is that, you know, in terms of being in the early stages of maturity, is kind of an architectural lock-in to a certain extent or a limitation. Some of the things that have been pointed out by some analysts, some other experts, is that, you know, there's kind of a lack of application programming interfaces at this point, maybe APIs to work with certain payment applications. Is that the case?
Well, I think from an overall application standpoint, the answer is yes. And so, you know, for instance, from a Newbridge's perspective, you know, we use web services. We connect with queuing enterprise service bus and queuing applications such as IBM MQ Series. So there are a few out there. You know, there's not, I will call it, the consistency among our vendors. But what is lacking out there is when we first started really dealing with PCI, and encryption was the only game, we've gone through and dealt with probably, I would say, more than, you know, 50 different vendors where you had to learn to exchange keys, et cetera, with point of sale and loss prevention systems and things like that. And so that was sort of the first wave. And now application vendors like point of sales and others are looking to say, how do we change our applications in order to, you know, remove scope or accept tokens? And I think we're in a second wave here where the same is taking place, although now it's a lot easier because they are dealing with tokens as opposed, and a pretty simple interface from a token standpoint, as opposed to how do I exchange keys? You give me a public key or a private key, et cetera, and how does all that take place? So the encryption model made it more difficult. The tokenization model is quite a bit easier, and we've worked, you know, from a tokenization partner standpoint, talk about Newbridge's here, with many vendors to do that. And one of the announcements we had made in April was with Sterling Commerce for their selling and fulfillment and cataloging application. They saw a need from the marketplace and their customers to say, we're running these applications on a bunch of servers. How can you, our provider, meaning Sterling Commerce, you know, use tokens to minimize the cardholder data environment from those applications? And so we've done that, and Veritape is another example of exactly that. And again, sort of pushing the envelope to help the merchant community out there to reduce the scope. But tokenization integration is a lot simpler than was the route of trying to encrypt in all these different places and then exchange encryption keys and figure out how those interfaces work.
So these are all areas, I suppose, where when a merchant is going to have to kind of flesh out on their own in terms of, you know, what they're currently using and whether your product or a competitor's product like Protegrity or Voltage will actually work with what you currently have in place, right? I mean, it's so early, you definitely need to do your homework there.
Yeah, and again, I think organizations typically, for instance, a lot of times when you even mention the word encryption, I'll go early on, and tokenization is no different. Things have improved with it. So first thing they say is, what's the performance impact on my systems, my organizations, and look at that. And so truth be told, as soon as you put together a map and really see, in many cases, things get better. And what we've seen, for instance, today, if you will, you're passing a credit card into a loss prevention system. If you encrypt that and you have to do the analysis, what happens is you're actually decrypting that information. You're then analyzing the information, and that takes time. So that's a current situation, right? Well, if you think about it the other way and you use format-preserving tokens, that loss prevention system, for example, can do the job that they're doing today, but there's no decryption taking place. It's simply analysis of these format-preserving tokens. So the quality of the performance of their systems has actually improved while they're still accomplishing the exact same analysis, in this case, a loss prevention, a fraud detection system. So things can actually improve. And in hindsight, we've seen, many companies, while they look for an ROI for all this stuff, the best they have seen to date had been, basically a business process reengineering, right? They've changed their processes a little bit, but they've had a lot of gains. Now there's becoming more of an ROI from the de-scoping piece. Again, it's not the ROI from the overall, hey, I have to comply, but it's an ROI to say, okay, I've been paying this much or I'm going to pay this much on an annual basis, trimming down cardholder data environment, whether you're using point-to-point encryption or tokenization, now they can actually at least put together a pretty simple business case to justify that.
And I suppose that the guidance documents that will be coming out around tokenization will also address key management in the context of randomizing tokens?
Not so much in the randomizing of tokens, but covering the key management as it relates to the encrypting of the PAN values.
Okay.
To be stored in the actual data vault. Yep, you're absolutely right. So we've come up with a list of, if you will, guiding principles that cover things like, does a token need to be loon or not loon, or what's the constraints that have to maintain the same size of a field, and then we've covered all areas. What are the impacts based on the key manager being compromised versus what happens if, in fact, the token manager is compromised? So there's different approaches to looking at that. And so that's the work that the working group has put together. And we've handed that over to the technical working group. Hopefully, the majority, or if not all, the recommendations that we've made.
Well, that does it for this edition of Security Wire Weekly. Be sure to check out our previous podcasts and go to our podcast landing page at searchsecurity.com/podcast. And as always, you can get the latest security news and information at our news page at searchsecurity.com/news. For now, I'm Rob Westervelt. Have a great day.